Are you hungry? We hope so, because it's time for your weekly slice of Tres Leches, served as a podcast. Hey everyone, it's me, Johnny. I'm back from a week of being off. I'm so happy to be back with my squirrel friends and sisters to kick off a very special series this week called Be Good to You. Over the next 4 weeks, we're diving into a journey of self-care and personal growth, exploring the things that truly make us feel good inside and out. We're excited to be starting off with a very, very special guest and licensed therapist, Omar Torres. He brings a wealth of knowledge and a compassionate perspective to our discussion, reminding us of the power and simplicity in seeking help. So grab a comfy seat, pour yourself a cup of something soothing. It's time to be good to you. Let's get started. Welcome, my loves, or as Ian would say, hola, 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 beautiful souls. We're so happy to have you back on another episode of Tres Leches, and this is going to be so exciting because we have a very, very special guest. I think our first ever guest on the pod, not guest host, but guest. So this will be very exciting.
It's true.
Before we get to our guest, how are you, Ian and Juan?
Oh, I'm doing fabulously.
I'm great. I'm so excited we're starting this series. You know, I feel I'm in the middle of a hard 75 or 75 hard. How do you say it, Ian? 75
I don't know, because I'm on a chub 75. I'm not doing a hard 75.
You're on a medium firm.
It's 75 hard, isn't it? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, 75 hard.
Hybrid.
Exactly. So I'm on a 75 hard, and
it's a lot. 75 days no drinking, 75 days... two workouts a day, one has to be outside, one workout can be inside, reading 10 pages of a book every day, a gallon of water every day. It's a lot.
We're almost at the middle of the year, which is crazy. You know, we're on our way there. So the fact that we're doing this Be Good to You series feels like it really just lines up with everything in my life at the moment. We talked about New Year's resolutions earlier this year, obviously. I love New Year's resolutions. And this is kind of a time to affirm and check back in with some of those things and be like, oh, that was unrealistic. That was dumb. Why did I pursue that? Mm. And this is, I feel like this month-long series will be a better way to establish what is really meaningful to work on, to be better, get better, do better, feel better, look better, move better, work better through here, through 2020. The year of our Lord and Savior. So, you know, it's like, I'm just excited about it. Yeah, but this hard 75 thing is good, but I'm the no drinking is chaotic, but I'm making it through.
Yeah, you got to feel those feelings, all of them.
Smile
which,
through it.
Speaking of feelings, you know, I love a transition.
Yes.
Our first Be Good to You episode is dedicated to therapy. Yes, you've heard about it. You might be in it or you might be avoiding it, but it's going to find you. And today we have a very special guest, our friend of the pod, an actual friend in real life, therapist Omar Torres is here, baby.
Hi. Thank you all so much for having me and inviting me over. I was so honored.
Oh my God.
Yes. Also, if you're listening and you want just a picture of what Omar might look like, he is brown, supple, delicious, a Latine girl, just like the rest of us. So we're so happy to be amongst familia, as we would say.
No, it's wonderful. I've been all day long, I've just been saying Omar Torres. Omar Torres.
I love it.
Omar Torres.
We're it's so like happy molasses. To have
therapist I love that. Omar Torres on.
He shares your last name.
I know. That's somos right. Tocayos.
My dad is Juan. So ooh, you and my dad would be exact. I'm like,
imagine if we found out on the pod that like you had the same
Juan had a child.
I know.
My dad was also Juan, so we could be brothers. I don't have your hairline, honey. I do not have that hairline and I do not have that skin.
Oh my God.
No, truly, it's enviable. When if I get to Turkey before 2025, I'm taking your picture and I'm saying, I want the Omar Torres, baby.
That's the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me. I'm going to take your picture to Turkey. Finally.
Wow.
I feel so seen.
That is such a specific compliment.
I'm
Omar
curious.
With good hair.
Omar, mm-hmm. Omar with the... Wait, that is literally what I wrote in my notes app when I was taking notes. I literally was like, Omar with the good hair. That's really fucking
our
funny.
Our,
I know. Unibrain.
What's your question about the hair?
My is question it about to the hair? Omar... No, my question was... Well, we can talk about... What about your hair?
Yeah.
Is your hair
to you,
yours?
The hair.
Anyway, and if it's not yours, it's great. You went to Turkey too. I was just going to say, where are you from?
So born and raised... here in Washington Heights and New Jersey. So Washington Heights as a little kid,
oh,
and then New
God.
Jersey for like middle school, high school. So I was always like in the area. I'm kind of like a townie in
our
that
very
way.
Own
like
Usnavi.
Never left.
Local.
Yeah.
Our very own.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I am half Dominican, half Puerto Rican. My dad's Dominican. My mom's Puerto
I know
Rican.
That's
so
right.
That's my ethnic background. Yeah.
It's a good mix. That's a good mix right there.
We've got the Caribbean covered from east to west.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
For real.
And so, you know, being growing up in Jersey and, you know, being a gay boy, which, you know, all of us have been at some point. What was it about therapy that made
indecisive.
You be like, I want to do that? Like, I've always wanted
that
to ask you that. I don't think I've ever asked you that.
Yeah, that is a question that even I'm still trying to figure out till this day, because I don't have like a vivid memory of watching something on TV, seeing a therapist and being like, oh, that's what I want to do. So I actually don't know where I got it from. No one in my family was in therapy. It's not like there's a therapist in the family. So I had to have gotten it from somewhere. Yeah. Where, I have no idea. But I do remember always being the friend growing up that friends would go to for support or advice. I was often the friend that people would tell like their secrets to, like I was like that friend and there was, and so like that was always something I was like very comfortable with, just like listening and trying to help people or being helpful. And that, you know, that stuck with me.
You know,
sure.
Not to therapize you a little bit, but I hear that and I'm just like, I maybe you guys will agree that that's sort of a feature of being gay, I think, is whether or not we asked for it or we chose it. There's this kind of way you grow up being someone who people come to people feel very comfortable. I'll speak for me. Like, I have always like known everyone's secrets. Everyone feels very comfortable around me. They want to talk to me about their lives. There's this way that like I access people and they allow access through me, like with me. And I think like, I wonder as gay people growing up as a way, God, this is a true hypothesis, but like as a way to get love, we made ourselves invaluable to the women around us. Definitely our friends' moms. I was best friends with all of my friends' moms. Uh-huh. Just your friends in general, there's this way that you're like, well, if I'm so special, but I'm not, I don't know how to figure that out yet. And I'm unclear about like receiving how I'm going to get love. Like it was a way of getting it. I don't know. And so maybe that's maybe the thing you're doing now to help people came out of a not a trauma response, but like a survival response in a way.
For sure. So that, and it was how I could remain undetected. So if everyone is always talking to me about their problems, I never have to talk about mine. I never have to talk about what's going on with me. So it was also a way for me to remain invisible, but in plain sight. So that way I could navigate and just like get through the day without being called gay. Getting through the day. And so that was my survival mechanism, right? Which is like, as queer people, we figure out like the best way to kind of go undetected. And for some people, it's like, I'm going to be the best student. I'm going to be the star athlete. I'm going to be the funniest. And for me, it was like, I need to be as invisible as possible. I need to make as little noise as possible. So I was always like the best behaved kid. Yeah. Because the less noise I made, the less attention I drew to myself. And that was like, okay, that's how I'm going to get through this.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's led you to such a beautiful, I feel like, career. And, you know, I think a lot of times we can take that, what we've like been through as queer kids, and really like, you know, I mean, as someone who is in therapy and has heard lots of stories, you know, there is a lot that comes after that upbringing and, you know, and I don't want to say it's exclusively queer people. I mean, we all experience some sort of trauma and growing up. Therapy is important for everybody, but I think specifically for, you know, when there's a lot more intersection, it's, you know, it could get a little more dicey. And I think that's what's so exciting about this is that being good to yourself can be so many different things that are actually, you know, like even sex, like sex can be so wonderful if done in a way that is, you know, uplifting and great. So we, yes. I mean, we have some questions that we've like, we personally have, you know, written down or have for you. And I'll go first because I'm
please
in charge
do.
Right now. No, I'm just kidding. But I do want to say, I think the entry point for a lot of people when it comes to therapy is one of those that, like, I would say either gets in the way or, you know, doesn't. It's like a wall. It's like people are always like, where do I go seek therapy? What therapist do I go to? It's like so, it feels like dating almost. It's like, where do you start? Is there an app? Is there a resource? And then, you know, the level of healthcare, especially in this country. So do you have any, like, tips or things that you tell people right off the bat, like here's how to get started?
Yeah, so I have a few. I often tell people a few different things depending on their circumstances and depending on what they're comfortable with. So first things first, don't underestimate word of mouth. So if there's someone in your life that seems like someone who's really like got a good head on their shoulders, is someone who you feel like offers really great wisdom or guidance or support, they navigate the world in a way that is really impressive to you.
They're lying.
They're a prod. I would recommend asking that person, like, who's your therapist? You know what I mean? It's almost like plastic surgery. When you see someone that got something done, like really good, you're like, who's your doctor? It's similar with like a therapist. So if there's someone in your life that
I've done that.
Yeah.
That I've done.
So it's the same muscle that you're flexing, right? In that moment. And that's of course, if you're comfortable letting folks know that you're looking for a therapist, you might not be super comfortable with that. So that's fine. The other way, and this is if you have insurance, if you have like solid, decent insurance, is to go through your insurance. They, if you call their like customer service number, they have a directory of therapists in network. And you filter the search even via like zip code. So if you want to find someone that's like close to your home or close to your office, or maybe not close, you want someone like kind of far away, you can filter it that way. And you know, they're in network right away, which is obviously one of the barriers to entry for a lot of therapy. Right. And then there are two directories that I would recommend. One is Psychology Today, which I feel like people often associate with the magazine naturally so, but they also have a massive directory of therapists. And you can even see, like, does this therapist take insurance or not? Do they specialize in anything? Are they Spanish speaking? Are they right? So you can filter it that way. And then lastly, there's another directory called Manhattan Alternative. Don't let the name fool you because it encompasses therapists throughout the country. But that I also really like because they have all these drop down menus that allow you to filter even by like topics covered. So if you're looking for a therapist that has experience working with sex workers, you can filter through that. Oh, if you're looking for a therapist that's taking new clients right now or has a waiting list, you can filter that way as well. So Manhattan Alternative, it's really, really good. I often will send people that way. And then if there's a therapist that, let's say you reach out to and they're like, sorry, I'm not taking new clients, ask them for referrals. So therapists usually have colleagues that, like I do, I have colleagues that I really like who I would go to for therapy if they weren't my friend, that I will often say, so I'm booked, but here's a colleague of mine who's wonderful. And I will often do that as well. So, you know, feel free to ask a therapist if they're like, you know, booked and busy, ask them like, well, do you have any referrals in mind? We usually do.
You know, the Psychology Today portion of that was a total surprise to me until today. Earlier today, I was trying to find your website. Mm-hmm. So I put in your name in Google and it took me to your Psychology Today profile, mm-hmm. and then I realized that there was another whole another wing and branch mm-hmm. to this website that is this directory. I had no idea.
Yeah, and
it's
huge. I've
been in therapy, you know, for a long time. I've searched for therapists before. I've done this work and did not know that. Okay, so I have a question that kind of piggybacks on accessibility to therapy and to finding a therapist, maybe for the first time. I grew up in a, you know, in a land household where I would not say that therapy was discouraged or that psychiatry or psychology or any mental health support was discouraged. It just wasn't something that we talked about all the time. I lived in a very liberal, up-to-date house, whole family. And so it wasn't totally taboo, but just wasn't on the front burner of our family conversations. All that is to say, I still feel like there are many people for whom therapy just seems out of reach. And of course, there are the logistical challenges, financial and just time that people face. But what would you say, you know, for people who don't know or haven't really really done the research, what is a reasonable expectation for the first 6 months with a therapist? What should that be about if you have never been to therapy or have anyone in your life who can tell you that? What is that first chunk of time with a therapist like?
Great question. This isn't maybe the perfect analogy, but it's sort of like, dating. So for someone that's never been in therapy, I want you to treat it like you would any brand new relationship, which is like, who is this person and how do I feel in their presence? What is it like to be around them? What is it like to talk to them and to be very mindful of your experience, right? So to ask yourself, how am I feeling right now? What is this like for me right now? Am I finding myself feeling really anxious most of the time? Do I find myself feeling bored? Do I find myself feeling intellectually stimulated? Do I find myself thinking like, oh, wow, good question. Like, what are you like during the session? And what is it like being in the therapist's presence? Because it's about feeling comfortable and it's about that relationship. So you really have to prioritize the relationship and making sure that that feels like a solid relationship.
And how long after the dating starts do you realize, how many dates should you go on before you say, you know what, this isn't a match?
So of course it varies. There's no like one size fits all approach. I would say that after the fourth one, if you are still feeling like, I don't know about this, that's when I would consider maybe seeing another therapist. But before that, I would honestly encourage, and I know this is a tall ask, but I usually encourage people to bring that up in the therapy session, to have a conversation about what you feel like is not being addressed or what needs are not being met or the discomfort that you're feeling. And just like, allow the therapist to respond to that or address that. Because there have been instances where someone will come to me and they'll be like, I don't know. And it turns out that the reason they're feeling that way is, you know, because the day and time is too stressful. And it's actually a really bad day and time. And I'm like, if you need to meet at 5, then we can meet at 5. That's fine. You know what I mean? And then it's like, and then they feel so relieved and it's like a lot less stressful, right?
Has anyone ever said, I can't see you because you're too handsome?
I wish. Someone please. Everyone's like, no, I can see
you. I'm telling you that right now.
Or it's like, I feel uncomfortable because I have a friend that knows you. Our circles overlap. And if you don't tell me that, then I can't address that. And when that's come up, I've been able to say, totally reasonable concern. Here's my policy on privacy, on here is how I handle those social situations. And I front load all of that to them. So that way they know, oh, this is how Omar's not just walking around going like, oh yeah, that's my client. Let me tell you what he said. I can't remember, you know, it's like, no, this is how I am. This is what you can expect from me.
Do you feel as though being a gay man and, you know, treating other gay folks and queer people, do you feel like there's a different expectation? Like when, you know, I think some people, because I've told folks that I've seen my therapist out at like a party, and I was like, oh, I said hi, you know. And when I tell people, they always have this kind of like reaction, like, oh God, that's why I need a therapist that's like old and like not doesn't go out or do anything, because I can't, like, and it's almost as if they have less respect for this therapist or this person because they see that as like a, you know. But then I told you, I was like, but you're out as well, so why is that, you know? It's such an interesting thing. Do you run into that at all?
Yes. I remember having one client years ago who said, I'm paraphrasing, but it was like, oh yeah, my friends found your social media and they all said you seem really narcissistic and selfish because I had a bunch of pictures of me.
Yeah, and I'm like,
what, a client years
not
ago, one time.
This. Yeah.
Looking
name
for
him.
A name.
Name him.
She's a mess.
And so, and it felt very like, oh, there are all these expectations and values that people imbue onto me just by hearing that I'm a therapist. And it feels very much like I have to be almost like, I have to be extra careful with how I behave or what I do, because it's viewed through a particular lens. And it's like, well, you're not allowed to have a selfie. You're a therapist. And it's like, well, no, that's not how that works. I'm also a human being. So
yeah. You know what's funny? My first, one of the questions I wrote down was, how do your clients feel about you being so present on social media and that being a very big part of your, you know, your practice? And the reason that popped up for me was because I noticed while watching, I was like, if this was my therapist, how would it make me feel? Because I am one of those people who I like to keep certain things in my life very private. Like there are things that, like, I go over there to that space. I travel. When you were saying some people maybe want the therapist like 5 miles away because there's something about the ritual of like, I don't want it close to me, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Like, I have rituals set around, like, you know, in my life or whatever. And one of them was kind of being shined upon when I was like looking through your stuff. And I'm curious if your clients have ever mentioned how they feel about it, or how do they feel about it? Are they comfortable with it?
So and this is purely stylistic. So session one, I tell my clients that if I can find you on social media, I'm blocking you. So I block all of my clients like day one, and I let them know. Wow. Like, so just so you know, I'm going to block you. Now, obviously, there's plenty of ways that they can go around that, but it does set a tone, like a precedence. It does communicate a message around like boundaries and expectations. So like, sure, you could create a fake account and scroll through my Instagram if you want, but you know what's up. You know that the expectation is that that is separate. I'm pretty lucky. So most of, if not all of my clients have expressed some version of like, no, it's good to know that you are a human being that has a life, that does things. It actually makes me feel more comfortable around you. Mm. Like, the fact that you go out means like there are certain things about gay culture that you understand that I don't have to explain. I don't have to explain to you horse meat. I'm not like, horse meat, what? What's that? What happens there? Is that a book club? Or they could just like say it and it's like, got it. I know.
Of sorts.
Yes. They're painting a picture.
A very dense, like, yeah, dense very book club.
So rigorous,
short
very
books.
Dense,
short
rigorous.
Books.
Yeah. Essays. Essays.
Blurbs, even.
Idioms. Sometimes it's just the idiom itself.
Oh my gosh. So I think it's also a self-selecting group, my clients. I think folks that would feel uncomfortable are not reaching out to me. And so I'm not having a ton of those conversations, although it's happened before where someone saw like a YouTube video I did and they were like, it was a little weird because on the YouTube video, you were so much more like jovial and laughing a lot and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, yeah, I laugh. So
she's a different medium.
When she's around
me. Yeah. It was the opposite. It was you weren't serious enough. Like that was strange for me to see you not in this like more serious professional role.
You know, I have to say that there is in the wanting the separation, no, sorry to this man, sorry, Ian, to that wanting that separation, it's giving a little millennial shame to that. I feel like younger people are, who have been online for their entire lives, even in a way that even though we have been online for our, we're all about the same age, we've been online for our adult lives, they've been online for their entire life. I think there's going to be more comfort with younger people who find their therapist or that online. I think that's a thing that has to do with age too, because the reality is, and as someone who's been in therapy for a long time, sorry, what was I criticizing your age, Ian?
I wasn't sure. I think I just had a reaction, but I wasn't. Were you criticizing my 27 plus years age?
I am, and I'm not criticizing your 27
She's
plus.
She's saying
I'm
that 27 your, minus might have just a little bit more of a
yeah. I'm criticizing
open mind
your 27
about.
Plus kind of like not being able to chew gum and walk at the same time. Like you see your therapist at a party. Who the hell cares?
Got it.
It's
yep.
like I feel like it's a thing that it's something that I, as someone who's been in therapy, would suggest as people who are looking for a therapist, what's important is to find someone who gets you, whether they are on social media or not, whether you live in the same city, maybe you hang around in similar circles, there's a chance that you could see each other. You know, that's, you know, all it is how you handle it when you do see each other, right? And most licensed professionals are trained in what to do in those kinds of scenarios.
For sure.
So to not put too much stock in that and just find someone who's great. But I get it. I do get it. I do get Ian. I do understand your point that, you know, you want to have a...
I want to have a what? Yeah, I want... Tell me.
That you want to have a separation of church and state. I totally understand that. I get that. It's just that in this day and age, that's going to be harder and harder to get.
Yeah. Mm. I just like to keep it like the same way it's Alcoholics Anonymous. I just want to keep like therapy anonymous. You know what I mean? Like maybe that's the way I also equate it. I see it as just like, it's this place and like I come to you and I'm not airing out or exposing dirty laundry like all the time. And I think we actually live in a little bit of a too much of an oversharing world right now. And I actually am one of those people who sometimes like I dive into the pool of overshare sometimes on social, but I just even mean like with like friends, I am not, I don't tend to overshare. And so I think I just naturally I'm naturally on the side of like, you're talking, that's, I don't need to know all of that from you.
Yeah,
you know
right.
what I mean?
I get that.
No, I agreed. And I think there is something to be said for prioritizing the therapeutic experience for sure and making sure like I'm comfortable, they get me and all of that. And I also get that if I was on social media going on like a racist rant or like a transphobic rant, that a client would be like, no, I'm not gonna, like, maybe you're great, but that says something about your values. Correct. How could that not infiltrate the therapeutic relationship? So I also understand to a degree why you care about someone's presence outside of the therapy as like dictating like the values of the therapist. But it's like a tightrope walk, you know, you want to care, but not so much that it's getting in the way of you getting like good treatment.
Yeah, of course. And mind you, I want everyone to go enjoy. Like if I had a gay therapist who I saw at like, I don't know, another book club called LeBain on Sunday, I'd be like, oh my God, like there they are over there. It'd be fine. Like I'm not saying that makes me feel uncomfortable or anything like that, right? Johnny, what were you going to say?
How you feel as a therapist, you know, because this is one of the things I see online all the time and it's kind of like a pet peeve of mine, but there's a lot of like therapy TikTok and like therapy speak. And I feel like a lot of people take what they want from those clips and they think, you know, this one clip, they're like, narcissism. Oh, he's a narcissist. He's a narcissist. And I do see a lot of therapists that are like, hey, guys, we can't just use words for everything that like don't really apply. How do you feel when you see, because you use social media, obviously, to advance your practice and to, you know, just add a more approachable look to what therapy is, which I think is wonderful. But I also do see the like dark side of like people using it in lieu of therapy.
Right. It's like a little bit of a like therapeutic bypassing. It's like, or spiritual bypassing. It's like performing the work while not really doing the work.
Wow.
I see
that. So when I see, things like that, I roll my eyes on social media. I usually just roll my eyes and I just go like, okay, I want to try to help folks interpret this kind of information in a way that is more useful and sustainable. So I like to talk to clients about, if they say like, oh, I saw this thing on TikTok, then I like to talk about like, so how can we integrate this into your life in a way that makes sense for you?
Period.
Right? And so when you hear things like, I don't know, I think a really good example of this that I saw online that was real oddly polarizing was RuPaul, you know, saying, if you can't love yourself, how in the hell can you love anybody else?
Yeah.
Mm. And some therapists being like, that you don't have to love yourself to love anybody else. And bah, bah, bah. And I'm like, okay, yes. But also let's like take it down. Let's like lower the stakes. Let's like talk about what Ru probably really means by that, right? Yes. I don't think
actually,
Ru is
yes,
saying...
Actually, let's do that. Because what do we think that person that was saying... Like, what do they mean? Like, that is conditional? That if only you love yourself, then that's the only way you can love someone else?
Yeah, so they were saying that basically that kind of advice is too black and white. Mm. It leaves no wiggle room for struggling... There's no wiggle room for like internal conflict and struggle. So some people don't love themselves, right? And that doesn't mean that that person is incapable of loving someone else, which is true. But my point is, I don't think that that is what RuPaul is suggesting.
Correct.
Right, correct.
I think it is it's just a little nugget of advice, and you have to be like, take it with a grain of salt. Yeah.
Right. Just so, like J-Lo. Block. She's from a block in the Bronx, and we're right. just gonna have to accept it. It's That's fine. It's right. where she comes from. It's just part of.
Right. It's just part of it.
Yes. And I also see people really, and it comes from a good place. But I see people really strive to love themselves, and think, okay, I have to love myself before I can enter a relationship. And I'm like, that's also not true. Like, that's not true. Now you're taking it to an extreme. Mm. It's okay to be like, I can take it or leave it when it comes to myself and still try to enter into a loving relationship, because relationships can actually also help you learn how to love yourself a little bit more.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean by like, we live in these like extremes. We take advice like that and it's either this or that. And it's like, well, there's something in the middle that I think works for everybody. And we need to figure out what that is for you on a case by case situation.
Those big ultimatums feel very satisfying. Those like personal declarations of right and left. They feel good because then you can say, well, if I'm not this, and I don't even have to even try to do that.
Yeah.
Oh, I get the appeal, the simplicity.
It's so wild how we latch onto some of these things. And that's a perfect example of
it's
one.
It's actually why I have now muted or if I feel, because I feel like it targets me. I have a lot of self-helpy things on my feed next to like puppies and, you know, old great dames doing amazing speeches from movies we love, you know what I mean? And abs. But there are a lot of self-help therapy things. And it feels so kind of, I love what you said. It feels like it's performing the thing. And I'm like so aware of like kind of, it actually doesn't make me feel so good. The thing you're actually trying to share that's supposed to like unlock some sort of new knowledge in me that's going to help me through my day has now kind of been a moment of stress for me, which is kind of, it's
kind
annoying.
Of like, it feels like, you know, I always have analogies for everything. And like, I feel like
you have analogies.
Yeah. I like, it's like food. Like I feel like the stuff on TikTok, it's like, it nourishes for only so long, but when you sit in the kitchen and you prepare from the beginning of, you know, you have your salt and you have your stuff and then you make it, it feels so much more nutritious because you put in so much work to get that. Or like custom couture. Like if you buy a shirt at Zara, that thing's coming apart a little quicker than if you were to get it custom made for your body, for your, you know what I mean? Like, for that's sure. how I feel when I see that stuff.
Unless
like,
you're buying this from gonna... Zara in Europe. Zara in Europe is actually really good, by the way. Their clothing. It is. I think it's yeah, it's like, it's that's a myth bust. That's like a,
we'll fact
that's,
check that.
Yeah,
we'll,
someone we'll, will we'll find this episode and be like, that. We're going to myth bust what Ian's saying, but I do believe yeah. it's, everything's better in Europe.
So speaking of, you know, the fact that people are accessing free therapy online, TikTok, Instagram, etc. What do you say to people? You know, if you can't, or at this moment you can't afford it, or you don't have the time. I read a quick thing on Psychology Today that the two of the big, you know, other than money, the other thing that keeps you from going to therapy is work or mm-hmm. their kids, the ability to actually go there. What would be something? What is something that someone can do right now at home? They're not in therapy. Maybe they're looking to get there, but that they can do to better themselves for the rest of this year.
Yeah. If there's a therapist or an individual who you like the way they think about the world or navigate the world, I'll often recommend that folks just like type their name into like the podcast search mm-hmm. bar and listen to every interview they've done, yep. for example, right? And get a sort of like an insider's look into their process and how they reach certain conclusions and how they think about things, and do what you can to apply that to your own life. I would also say if you're too busy for therapy, you're too busy. Time is not something you find. Time is something you create. You have got to carve it out. I am never going about my day and accidentally stumble across 3 free hours. That never happens, right? So I'm never like, whoa, I have I have 2 hours free. How did that happen? It's like, no, if I have 2 hours free, it's because I made sure that I said no to things. I made sure that I like blocked that time out. It takes effort to find free time. Right. And whether that's 5 minutes or an hour or 2 hours, it really has to be something that's intentional. And there, I can almost guarantee you that there is a therapist out there that will be willing to work around the fact that like you have kids. Like I've had clients with kids and they can't come to the office because no one is around to watch their kids. So they have their kids sitting on their lap during our session and that is fine, right? Like the important thing is that you are linked to a therapist that you like and that you're putting in the time and the effort. So I don't want folks assuming, oh, I'll never be able to find a therapist who'll be okay with my kid playing in the background or even my kid coming to the office. I know plenty of therapists that will even like buy toys for the kid to play with during the session while they're having it with their client. Like someone will work with you, someone. And there are some therapists that will be like, no, like your kid is not allowed in here. Fine. But there is someone who would be more than happy to work with you around that. So don't assume that those are barriers to entry. Talk to the potential therapist first about it.
What I wanted to say is that I feel, you know, there's a lot of, I think people put up roadblocks for like, I don't have time, I can't afford, but sometimes when you boil it all down, it's because they're not ready. And I feel like everything we do in life, it's like you do it when you're ready. What would you say to people who know someone that you feel like could benefit from therapy, but you don't want to be like, you need to go Tuesday? You know, what do you suggest yes. doing to help mm-hmm. make a space for, you know, the potential for them to want to do it?
So there's quite a bit of literature on this. The time that it takes for someone from the moment they reach out to a therapist to when they actually have their first session is something like 6-7 months for someone that is brand new to therapy. And full disclosure, I was the same way as a therapist. So I graduated from grad school like a couple of years later, got a job as a therapist. A colleague was like, hey, you should go to therapy. It's good for you. You're a therapist. Try my therapist. I was like, okay, fine. I emailed him. He responded with like, yep, I have openings. I need you to sign some paperwork. It wasn't until like 5 months later that I like completed the paperwork and then finally started engaging in therapy. So My general response is like, listen, we're here when you're ready. Like, we're here. The stuff that needs to be addressed, it's not going anywhere. So do you want to start now or do you want to start later? It's like totally up to you.
And when there's more dust in the apartment.
Right.
Honey.
Right. And it's like, we can start doing the work now and you know, and 6 months from now, imagine how far you'll go versus starting at 6 months and then like the time starting there. So, you know, I mean, I don't think it's good or bad when you start, or like this idea of you should start right away and readiness, like it's up to you, but we're here, we're waiting. So, mm-hmm. you know, I'm game whenever you are. Yeah. I would prefer we start right away, but you know, again, that's like, I understand. It's like dipping your toe in the pool, and you're just like testing it out. And so I get it. I don't feel strongly about it. It's more like I'm waiting with like open arms.
Oh, it's scary to start. It's scary to start.
Yeah. It's, you know, even for me when I started as a therapist, I was like, this is nerve wracking. And so that's why I have the approach that I have now, because I remember how nerve wracking it was for me with all my training, with all my understanding, and I was still really nervous and I couldn't quite pinpoint it. It wasn't like, I'm afraid the therapist is going to be mean to me or like whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was just this like sense of like, oh, I'm about to go be super vulnerable. That's not fun. Like, how about I just go to happy hour instead? You know what I mean? Like, so I'm, you know, I totally understand it, which is why I'm like, take your time. We're here.
Yeah.
There's, you know, but the sooner the better, ultimately. But
what's that saying? Procrastinate now. Don't put it off.
Right.
just kidding. But I was thinking about like when I first also was like starting my therapy journey, I think, and a lot of people would probably have felt this way, is like, you just don't know. You're like, I haven't done it yet. I've only ever heard what everyone's saying, but like, I don't know it yet. So anything that you have no understanding of feels scary. It's the unknown. And then there's also the added layer that I think was very, it was a part of like those first couple months when I was like auditioning therapists, which was, now does this mean something's wrong with me? The idea that like, because I'm searching for, and I knew like kind of logically that there wasn't, but there's this subconscious way that maybe some shame is wrapped around it, this way like I've been doing fine up until, or blah blah blah, like everything has been okay, like why all of a sudden do I feel like I need to go do it? Though that kind of it can freeze you. It can feel very like kind of immobilizing.
Paralyzing,
exactly. And like, once I realized that like therapy doesn't mean there's something to fix, it's just like a place where you get to explore and be very curious about what it is pops up in your everyday life. And so for anyone who has either felt those exact same feelings and thoughts about it, it's just like going to your camp counselor or your, you know, your school, they're your school counselor who like helped you pick out the colleges and do the thing and like talked you through possible scenarios is kind of what you're doing. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like a version of that. So
it is. Really, that's a really good way to think about it. You know, I mean, my high school guidance counselor.
And we know that obviously, like from back in the day, like therapy was reserved. Like it was like, oh, you're going to a shrink. Like there was such a different connotation and a different kind of, it was taboo. You didn't talk about it and blah, blah, blah. And it was for mostly women or this or that, or like you sent people to go like fix them. But now it's instead of rehab, it's prehab.
Yeah. It's more about maintenance versus like, I need to fix something or I need to manage this crisis, which you could also find, you could also do with a therapist. You know, like most of one's life, you are the architect of the therapeutic process. So if you want to go in and you're interested in exploring your love life, your relationships, your relationship to your job, it's really up to you. Like the therapist is the co-pilot, not the director. So what I often tell people that are a little nervous about like, oh, but I'm worried it's going to be like, and I'm like, it is whatever you want it to be like. And if there is a therapist that continues to try to monopolize or you know, unprofessionally kind of make the therapy session about what they want it to be about, then it's probably not a good fit. Mm-hmm. While at the same time recognizing, you know, there are some instances where I've said to a client, you know, so there's this thing that I kind of want to talk about that I feel like we're not talking about. Mm. Could we talk about it? Mm. Like, how would you feel if we talked about this thing today? Because mm-hmm. I've been thinking about this and I think it's relevant, you know? And some clients have said, totally, let's talk about it. And other clients have said, I need more time before I'm like not quite ready yet. And I'm like, fair enough. Just so you know, I will be bringing this up probably every other week just to take the temperature. Mm-hmm. And so that way, you know, I will bring it up again. And they're like, totally fair. So, you know, it's collaborative, right?
Mm-hmm. It's so helpful to hear about your process because obviously there's so many ways to go to be in therapy because it all depends on the relationship between two people. There's so many variables and to kind of hear that, like, yeah, there are different ways to do this and this is just very comforting to me to kind of peek behind your curtain. You have something on your Instagram that really spoke to me and it was kind of your three steps to a happier, more joyful life. And it was so tidy and simple. It was chicken soup for my teenage soul. I just really loved it. And I was hoping that you could share your idea, this grand idea.
Yes. So the post you're referring to is three steps, like you said, to a happier, healthier you. I wanted something clear, succinct, simple, accessible.
And funny.
And funny. Yes. Yes. Lighthearted. And the guidance was basically mind your business. That was, in a nutshell, that was it.
Do you die? And, it's so good.
That is like one of my life mantras. That is one of the thoughts and ideas that is been in my like toolkit for a really, really long time. And I tend to find that when one of the reasons why I feel when I do like upset or frustrated or angry or whatever, it's because I'm not minding my business enough. And I'm like, oh, I need to mind my business. And I can't take credit for this. So I saw this Issa Rae interview where she said the same thing. It was like, what's your New Year's resolution for everybody? And she's like, I forget what it was, like maybe 2020 or 2021, whatever. For 2021, my resolution is, or everyone's resolution should be mind your business. But I was like, oh, I love that. And so she framed it as like a New Year's resolution. And I am framing it as like, here are three steps that you should take, that you can take to live a happier and healthier life. And I stand by it. I think more of us should mind our business a little bit more, a lot a bit more, actually.
And what I like about it is because minding your business, we have it in the connotation of like, mind your business.
Right. Yeah, but it's
right. But it's also like tend your garden. It's also like mind your business. Take some time to handle your business.
Yep.
And it's your business, your professional life, your work life, your romantic life. That's all your business. And you have to mind it. Someone's got to mind it, baby.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if you ain't minding, I don't know who's going to be minding.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Has to be doing the minding.
Yeah.
It's also about caring a little bit less about what other people are saying and doing.
Yes,
of course.
Like, put down your phone. Mm-hmm. You do not need to leave a comment in the comment section. Scroll past. Mind your business, read a book, touch grass, do something else. There's a level of like disengagement that is also implied in this, like, mind your business, like divest from that. You don't have to do that. It's okay.
Mm-hmm. Omar, since we have you here, we have a little segment where we do Spilled Milk, where we answer listener questions, give them advice, etc. Will you stick around and spill some milk with us?
I'd love to.
Are you condensed or evaporated? I feel like you're evaporated milk, just like
me. Oh my gosh. And condensed, I love. I love both. I'm not choosing. Don't make me choose.
Okay, great. I'll choose for you.
Don't make me choose.
We'll be right back. And we're back, everybody. Welcome back to Tres Leches. By the way, we should all, the four of us, this coalition of brown energy, there is a restaurant on the Upper East Side called I think it's called Tres Leches Cafe.
What?
Oh.
And they source tres. Well, a man with whom I had sex told me, he works in the restaurant industry, and he told me that some of the best, very, very fancy restaurants in New York City that have tres leches on their menu get it from this place.
Oh,
and, fast. They do different versions of tres leches for them. So, like, there's a French restaurant, and they do, like, a creme brulee tres leches.
Ooh.
But their basic tres leches is amazing. And tres leches is something that Dominicans, Cubans, Puerto Ricans, Colombians eat them. All
the great equalizer.
It's a great equalizer. Yeah, tres leches is so good. But anyway, here and there, we will do that to thank you for this, Omar, at the end of my
I would love that.
Yeah. We'll put in an application for it. We'll wait 5 to 6 months to really start that process of getting it, and then we'll make sure that this lich's cake gets you.
Call back. Call back.
Comedy. Comedy.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, this is Danny from Portland. And by the way, it's D-A-N-I. It's giving non-bind moments. This is perfect. This question is perfect for this series because it's really just about something that we're all striving after. Okay. Danny from Portland. Love tres leches. We love you too, Danny. I've been grappling with balancing my personal life and my career and my ambitious goals. It feels like whenever I focus on one, the other things in my life suffer. How do you manage to keep your personal and professional lives in harmony, or is it all just a myth?
Ooh.
Work.
Wow, that's a great question. I think I know why we didn't answer or tackle this is because we're all a mess. We're all a mess.
Well, I know.
You're like, same. Yeah, you tell me.
Mm-hmm. So Danny, here's what I'll say. I'll go first. As I mentioned earlier, I'm doing this hard 75 hard thing. And I've had to say no to more things than I used to. I'm literally saying no to things so that I have time to do these workouts that are required by this. I literally logistically need to say no to things. And I am welcoming that. I'm welcoming the no a bit in this next, Oprah's next chapter. And you have to understand that it's okay for things to suffer.
Mm.
I think that that is something that I did not know and appreciate in my 20s. In my 20s, I had this 80s, 90s notion of like my mom in the workforce, getting it all, mm-hmm. being the perfect mom, being the perfect sister. I kind of had her striving for all these things. I inherited that. Yeah. And she says here, how do you all manage to keep your personal and professional lives in harmony? Or is it just a myth? It's not always going to be harmonious.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. Your professional life may affect your personal life. And the people in your personal life will, if they're meaningful to you and they're in this with you, you should ask for them to understand, and they should. Things are going to suffer. That's how I, you know, and as long as you communicate, but part of it is communicating that there's going to be a shift.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I have failed in that in my time. I have, like, if I've had to focus on work a lot, I'll disappear into the work, but I will not have informed the people that care about me that this is happening. So then my personal life suffer more than they needed to if I had just spoken to them.
I'm going to say that actually since we've started the podcast, and this is like, you know, brownie points to like, this is just to Juan, but you have actually been a big source of like, being a better communicator to all of my other friends, because you're so good at communicating with Johnny and I when like you have disappeared into work, or if there's a way that like we asked a question or there's some information that needed to be, I don't, you know, like just texting. Mm-hmm. And you've always been so good about like, I'm so sorry, or this, or like, hey, this is what's going on. And like, you let us know either, you know, in real time or after, about like what's going on. And I'm like, oh, I need to be better about doing that. So I just want to say, like, you do a really good job of doing that with Johnny and I, who you share in the pizza slice of life. Like, we are part of work for you, but we're also part of friendship. And I just, you do a really well job of like tiptoeing that.
Oh, that means a lot to me, because it's something that I'm not typically not good at that. So that was one of my New Year's resolutions.
No, yeah, and I'm speaking for me. Like, I just appreciate the way that you always offer a kindness to us, in the way that you, even it, sometimes I'm like, you don't have to say sorry so much about like the not getting back to us in the moment or something. But there's something about the way you teach me kindness on others with just the information, because it doesn't hurt. You know what I mean? You're doing a great job, sweetie.
Omar, what would you say to Danny?
Yeah, so I have a few thoughts. One, and one you touched on this, I suspect that there's a little bit of perfectionism at play here. This idea of all these things have to look and be a certain way. And if they're not, then that means they're suffering. And so my follow-up question is, might it be worth reconsidering what suffering actually looks like? Is it actually suffering, or is it just like life actually? Right? Maybe it's not that it's suffering. Maybe it's just life. So that might be worth considering. The other thing I suspect is that there's it sounds like there's quite a bit of compartmentalization happening. These things are separate: my personal life, my work life, my this life. And I would work towards integration a little bit more. So to your point, Juan, invite your friends along for the ride of your ambitions and of your goals. Like, bring them along, enlist them for help, recruit them to be your cheerleaders, like bring them along. So that way it doesn't feel like these are separate things that I need to tend to separately. It's all, you know, it's, integrate it more into your life, so that way it doesn't feel so separate from these other parts of your life that are important and that you do need to tend to. Because again, I wonder what in Danny's mind is the goal that they're striving for as it relates to all these parts should look like this. And I'm sort of, you know, I'm suspicious of anything that's like, this doesn't look right. It should look this other way. And I'm like, well, probably not. You're probably doing a lot better than you're giving yourself credit for.
Can I share a little personal anecdote about something very similar to what Danny's feeling? Because I'm in therapy, there's one of the things that me and my therapist have discovered is that I don't want to say addiction, because that, you know, that's a loaded word, but I have an addiction to self-improvement. And I am constantly, things can always be better. Things can always be, I can always have a more loving relationship, can always have, you know, a better relationship with my friends. I can have a better career. And, you know, what I realized the through line is that when I was younger, I always just felt like I needed to prove to my mother that I was a good boy. And so me at the very early ages wanting to prove that I was a good boy has infiltrated the rest of my life. And like, I have a lot of ambition. I've gotten a lot of the things that I've wanted because of that, because I've always wanted to be a good boy. But then there's that point where you reach where you're like, wait, what is this actually feeding me, or is this malnourishing me in many aspects of my life? And I found that it was blocking me from just really experiencing things without needing this kind of pressure to be good, to be better, to be amazing, to, you know, because what is that really? So I think that's why therapy is so important, because it really just gets to the fine granule of like, what is this? Why is this, you know? And I think it's good to hear that, because one, even asking the question of like, is this a myth, or is this normal, you know, is, I think, half the battle sometimes.
Agreed. Yeah, I think the fact that Danny is asking the question means they're like already ahead of the curve. And I would say, you know, don't try harder, try softer. If I were to offer like any like specific, succinct, clear takeaway, my guess is, Danny, you need to try softer, not harder at things. If I had to guess.
Right.
Good note. That's a good universal note for many, many different slices of the life pie, if you catch my drift.
she's hungry. We're hungry. Softer.
Yeah, I am. Yeah. I am always hungry. I'm always hungry, and I'm always horny.
And Danny, baby, it's not a myth. If it's real to you, it's real to you.
Yeah.
Unless there are voices. Those are not real.
Yeah.
But,
fair enough.
Yeah, that, those fair. Aren't real.
Well, now, not no. Let's not invalidate that experience either, Bonnie.
No, I'm not validating. You know,
it's the same way. It's the same way you call Titanic water poetry. Maybe people hear about voices.
Water poetry.
Do you know what I mean?
Listen, we had a debate on last week's podcast on what about the, that lyric in what song
from
is it?
Beyonce's Cowboy Carter. Yeah.
Daughter?
It's
no.
Daughter.
Is
yes.
it Daughter?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which I love. It's such a great track.
You know, I'm colder than Titanic
water. Titanic water, yep.
And to me, that lyric is absolutely beautiful. And Ian thinks it's, he thinks it's clunky and overly percussive. But we disagree.
I'm loving the discourse online about it. I'm like, yeah. Oh, this feels so lighthearted and fun. Like, sure, I'll pay attention to this.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's what we need. Yeah. Don't tell me what I need to fix. Can I just watch two other people argue about whether or not Beyonce is a really good lyricist? Thank you. That's what I want to watch. You know what I mean?
Now we're talking.
Exactly. So, Danny, I hope you got all your answers. I know you want to know what I have to say, but for the first time ever, I really like all the answers that were said before me, and I have nothing to add. More so because I want to get to my section of a question for Omar, actually.
Oh.
I have a question for you. Are there any therapists that you love and follow, you know, because we live in a social media world now, and one of mine is like Esther Perel, or like we love a Dan Savage. Are there any ones that you love and follow, and could you name them? And these are two kind of separate things that I'm going to, that like we're going to ask all of our guests, but is there a movie that you grew up watching that you would say is at the kind of like center of like Omar's essence that has kind of been with you your whole life? I just think it's like, it's very, it always tells like it's a good story about kind of like where we're from or who we are now.
It is.
Oh my gosh, I love that question so much. The Neverending Story.
Oh,
that is.
That
is
long.
Me wow. in a nut freaking shell.
Wow. Oh my yeah. God, the Neverending Story.
There are so many elements to that, like the hero's journey, yes. the like. Oh, the like thinking you're unimportant and not valuable, and then realizing you have so much power and so much. It's just like, it just,
wow.
Chef's kiss. It speaks to me so, 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 so much. Yeah.
Wow.
You should
that
probably
is a
take
great...
a look at that again. It's been so years.
Good. Yeah. So good.
That was one of those movies I remember that like when the teacher didn't want to teach that day, that we wheel in the TV, turn the lights off and put it on.
It's
and
about to get lit.
Yeah. We're gonna have a nice afternoon.
The tube TV on the rolly shelf is such an iconic image.
Although I don't know if that's a movie I would show kids because the scene where his horse dies is depressing. It's like, well, I don't want to be a downer.
That was my first
brutal scene.
Yeah. That was my first, like, you know, trauma. That was me experiencing trauma for the first time. Yes,
for real. Yeah. For real. Yeah. That was so rough.
Atreyu.
Atreyu. Let me look at my phone.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, please. All the time.
There are some clinicians that I follow that I love. And not necessarily, like, therapists, but Destiny Davis is a certified parent coach. And I know that sounds like a parent coach. There are so many principles that she talks about as it relates to raising kids that we talked about in like grad school, that we talked about in our training. And there's a lot of things that she talks about where I'm like, oh, this applies to adults too, 100%. And I just think she does such a good job of distilling potentially really dense clinical information in a way that's super accessible, that, you know, lighthearted. She has like a really great sense of humor about her posts. And yeah, I just like really, really respect her messaging when it comes to how to, how to parent, how to interact with your kids, how to make sure that you're keeping your own trauma and triggers in check, you know, and asking yourself questions like, is this my kid or is this my trauma right now? You know what I mean? And she does such a good job of encouraging parents to be like, if you're having a strong reaction, it's not because of your kid. It's your trauma. And you need to like unpack that. And I'm like, yes, please.
Would you say the same could be said about just relationships in general?
In general, right.
Yeah.
That's why it's like, oh, this applies to everything in, yeah. in life also.
I'm so happy this is a podcast that I'm going to be able to listen to again because there's so much. And I'm like, I was like, I wanted to take notes. And I'm like, no, Ian, you can just listen again to remind yourself of all of this.
Yeah. And there's another therapist. I don't think she has a social media presence, actually. Where? But
so she's invisible.
So she's invisible. But you all know her. Orna from Couples Therapy.
Orna.
Freaking love. It is. It's tough to watch her sometimes because I'm like, fuck. I wouldn't have thought of that. I'm like, damn it. How did she think of that?
Yeah.
And then
she's quick on her feet.
She's so quick.
There is no greater high that I experience when she does something and I go, I did that once too. And I'm like, yeah, me and Orna on the same page about that. So we're the same. There's nothing that feels better than that. But her approach, her style, the way she just so expertly like is discerning about what to talk about and when, it's it's just like watching like Simone Biles perform.
Yeah.
It's like so impressive. It's like, oh, this is what someone, this is what a master looks like.
Yeah.
Doing
I would agree.
The work. And it's just like so impressive to watch and it's so aspirational.
Yeah. But there's this thing she does that I was like, wow, she's so good at this one moment. It's when, and mind you, she is a couples therapist. So this makes sense that she would do this. I'm sure it's part of her training, but it's the way she does. Where are you is good. But it's when one person is talking, you know, whoever, and then they finish. And I always think she's going to just like keep talking to them and like kind of digging deeper. And the first thing she does is she goes, so how do you feel about hearing that? Every time she asks the other partner how they feel about what they've just heard is so like, I don't know why it like baffles me because I'm like, oh wow. Like it's about the other person. There's just something in that moment that I think is very disarming to the partner who doesn't expect to be asked that question. They're like, I think, you know, and it's like, it's my favorite. It's a moment that I find very powerful that she uses a lot.
Yeah I love that when she asks, and where does that land with you?
Yeah.
Is like, it's just so satisfying. Yeah.
And it's such a beautiful way to ask, like, you know, it's not as loaded as like, are you okay?
Yeah.
You know, do you hate
or
that?
Even, like, or even like, how does that make you feel? Which would be a perfect, like reasonable question, but it elicits a particular kind of response when you're asked, and where does that land with you?
It's
like you're forced to like tune into your body and to like really reflect on where that is, like where has that landed.
And I think it also helps the person who she's asking answer the question in the present. It's not all the kitchen sinking of it all. It's not all the other arguments about how you felt not in this room. It is in this moment as they have kind of just shared vulnerably with me. How does this feel right now? And it's just so great.
One more therapist that I follow, The Wellness Therapist. It's the wellness.therapist. They do a lot of work around misinformation. They do a really great job of integrating, you know, therapeutic work and activism. I think there's a lot of folks, I don't want to sound critical, I think there are a lot of mental health professionals who are probably really nervous to speak on some things on social media, which I totally understand.
Who can blame them?
Who can blame them? For sure. I also think there are some mental health folks that make a lot of claims about like, we're all about healing and higher vibrations and we're all about community. And then they're oddly quiet when certain things happen. And it's like, there is a way to straddle that line between, you know, what you talk about, but also your own ethics and values. And I think she does, the wellness therapist does a really good job of that. Destiny Ann Davis. Orna. And the wellness therapist. Those are folks.
You can find Orna on Instagram. You can find her on Paramount Plus or Showtime.
Paramount Plus. Yeah. Couples therapy. Yeah.
And if you're in New York, you can find Orna enjoying a black coffee right now, walking her dog along a Brooklyn street.
Yes.
Kind of tucking her hair behind her ears.
Yeah.
With a New Yorker tote. Just kind of.
And when, you know, and when we can find Orna, Omar, please tell us where we can find you.
Honey.
Hello. So you can find me on Instagram and TikTok. Have you tried therapy? You can also type my name in, Omar Torres, LCSW. And I think I pop up on those platforms. And I do have a website, omartorrestherapy.com. And that's all she wrote.
And she's working on other things too, so there's more to come.
Yes. There's other things, that I'm exploring. Yes, we'll just put it that way.
Well, thank you so much for being on here with us today as our first guest. Oh my God!
Yeah.
I hope
I set the bar high. I hope everyone after me is a terrible guest.
We were trying to set the bar low, but now we have to set it so high because
it's hard.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me. This is so lovely.
Of course. Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Over the past 75 years, more than 10,000 chemicals have entered our food supply, but the EU allows just 300 additives. At Thrive Market, we prioritize quality, banning over 1,000 ingredients found in conventional grocery stores. Our Healthy Swap scanner helps you find better versions of your pantry essentials without the junk, dyes, or fillers, and everything is delivered right to your doorstep. So shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health at thrivemarket.com/getstarted for 30% off your first order and a free $60 gift.